Maybe you really like wine, and maybe you're one of those people mystified by it, as in, how do people detect all those flavors in a glass of wine? One thing they're detecting is the unique sense of place that a piece of land gives to wine grapes grown on it. Wine from over there tastes different from wine from over here. We borrow a French word to describe that, terroir. It really and truly is the word terror, with an I before the final R. And there's a lot that goes into terroir down beneath our feet. That is a domain well understood by our first guest. Scott Burns is a geology professor emeritus at Portland State University. He'll lecture on terroir in the wine country in southern Oregon tomorrow night at 7 at the Hale Center at Southwestern Oregon Community College in Coos Bay. And he's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Scott.
Good morning.
So wine consumption, I noticed this in one of your presentations. How much has that increased in America just in the last few decades?
It has completely changed. If you go back to 1982 and they ask everybody who drank alcohol, what was your primary beverage? Wine was only 14% of all of the drinkers. Hard liquor and beer made up the rest of it. Today, it's over 42%. And the beer has stayed about the same, but the drinking of hard liquor has gone way, way down. If you go back to 30, 40 years ago, people did not go out to wine country on the weekends and visit wineries and sip the wine and stuff like this. Now it is found it, wineries are in every one of the United States, all 50 of them. And people enjoy going and tasting wine, going to the wine country, having receptions at people's houses where wine is expressed. And so it's a major change in our culture.
It truly is, and it seems like you drive down country roads in our neck of the woods, and it seems like there's not very far between each winery with a tasting room and maybe a little music going on in there as well.
Yes, and it's interesting, and for me, I'm a sixth-generation Oregonian, and to be able to see the transformation in our state has been wonderful. And Southern Oregon is very special. Got over 115 wineries in the whole area, and that number just continues to increase. In the state of Oregon, the Willamette Valley gets the major emphasis for wines and the famous wines. But, a fifth to a fourth of all of the wines made in Oregon and the acreage and the number of wineries is in Southern Oregon. And I got a chance over the last couple of years to visit every one of the vineyards and all of the wineries in Southern Oregon to learn about it. And there are some incredibly great wines that are being produced in Southern Oregon that not many people know about. And so the talk that I'm going to be giving tomorrow night down in Coos Bay is all about the terroir of Southern Oregon and helping people understand the great diversity that is there.
Scott, that term terroir, do we use the French word because there's nothing comparably short in English?
Yeah, and it really describes, and it goes back 400 years ago to the monks of Burgundy, and it's a taste of the place. And I love it. And I used to live in French-speaking Switzerland, so I speak French. But it really talks about what is the all of the things that go into wine. And it's the grapes, for instance. So every time you have a bottle of wine, it's going to be different from another than another based on, first of all, grapes. Is it a Cabernet? Is it a Pinot Noir? Is it a Chardonnay? Number two, the geology and the soils. And those are going to give you the 16 macro and micronutrients that are very essential. Climate is huge, the macroclimate and the microclimate that you have got. Soil hydrology, and that is water holding capacity, especially late in the season, if by chance you don't irrigate. And then the biological life that lives in the soil, which relates back to the amount of water and the geology, that will add to the flavors. Physiography, your perfect vineyard is going to have a south-facing slope and certain elevations below which the wines don't do well and above which they don't ripen. So that makes up terroir. But there are two other important factors, the winemaker, which is probably the most important, and the vineyard management. The rows go north and south, or they go east and west. Now, it's an interesting word because it now is being applied to many other things, cheeses, coffees. I was lecturing in Vermont, and they use it for their maple syrup. And we at Portland State are starting a new program on the terroir of marijuana, which Southern Oregon has been into for quite some time. And using all of the principles, the study of the five factors or six factors that I just mentioned, and how that relates to it. So it is an absolutely beautiful way to express differences in flavors, and it encompasses the climate and the geology and the grapes and all of those things. And then we apply it to so many different things now.
Scott Burns, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, geology professor emeritus at Portland State. We're talking about the terroir of wines, particularly in Southern Oregon. You can join the conversation, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So how specific is terroir? I mean, could wine from adjacent vineyards taste very different, even though they got the same grapes and same general...
And we know that to be true. And stories from Germany have been that way for years and years, and from Burgundy in France. And they're primarily best expressed in your cool climate grapes. Cool climate grapes are the German-style Rieslings, Gewürztraminer, Müller, Thurgau, Chardonnay. But in the United States, we over-oak it, so it overshadows that. And then the Pinots, Pinot Noir, Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, but especially Pinot Noir. Pinot Noir is a thin-skinned red grape. And I really believe that the best place in the world to taste differences in terroir is Oregon, because we have so many of these cool climate grapes. In the Willamette Valley, there are three major soil types, the marine sediments, the volcanic ones, and then the windblown silt ones. And you can have the same winemaker, same year, same vineyard techniques. Everything's the same except the soils, and the wines come out completely different.
So, for example, could you grow grapes from the same rootstock in two different kinds of soil and get very different tasting wine?
Yeah, the rootstocks do have something to do with that. In the United States, because of phylloxera, which is a little bug that kills the plant, most of the rootstock that we have is American rootstock, and it's grafted onto your Cabernets, your Merlots, your Malbecs, your Pinot Noir. And so the upper part of the plant is different from the lower one. But then the rootstock also will, there are five or six major types that you have got. So, yeah, those will affect them too.
All right, so you listed, you went through the variables of what goes on
right.
with vineyard soils. You got depth, you got pH, salinity, texture, structure, consistency, drainage, clay content, color, rockiness, limestone, and caliche. So how much preparation does or should go into any vineyard before the grapes are actually planted?
Well, one of the major things you'd want to know is what type of soils. Like, for instance, in the Rogue Valley, the north side of the Rogue Valley, those soils are so rich in clay that and it's very hot, so they have to irrigate. It is really difficult to irrigate. Now, the local vineyard managers have come up with a way of doing that, but if you were going to be buying this property versus this one, your cost of irrigation will go up, for instance, if you have what we call vertisols, soils that are highly impermeable. And so there are a lot of different things. Out in the Illinois Valley, so Cave Junction, which has a lot of large wineries there, there is a lot of magnesium in the soils and a lot of what we call serpentine bedrock, just like in the Napa and Sonoma valleys. And that does not lead to good wines, and so therefore you have to mend the soils. You've got to add calcium sulfate or gypsum to the soil, raise the calcium level, and then reduce essentially the level of magnesium. So you need to ask, what are the soils, what's the geology, what is the drainage that you have got in the areas, and what's the local climate. So looking at the area, you can do that. Now, in the state of Oregon, we have extension from Oregon State, and they can help you. And so if you want to go into an area and start a vineyard, the extension agents in southern Oregon, in the Umpqua, the Applegate, the Rogue, and the Illinois Valleys, they can say, oh, these are the things you really want to point out and do and not do.
All right, so if magnesium and serpentine soils are not particularly conducive to wine, are there kinds of soils and minerals within those that are really good for wine?
Yeah, calcium, for instance, is something that some of the best wines in the world are on limestone bedrock. But they all create different flavors. So back in the Willamette Valley, the volcanic soils are completely different from the marine sediments, which are sandstones and shales, which are different than the windblown silt that has been mixed into the volcanic soils. And each one brings to the plate a different set of elements, which lead to different flavors. And so it's fun to be able to do that. And so in a small area, you can compare the different flavors. Southern Oregon is producing a lot of Pinot Noir. And there's some vineyards like Danson that are comparing his Pinot Noirs to the Pinot Noirs from the Willamette Valley, and they're doing quite well. And so it's fun. People love differences and different flavors, and then being able to explain the differences, and we can do that through the soils, through the microclimate, macroclimate, and things like that.
Scott Burns, again, geology professor emeritus from Portland State University, lecturing tomorrow on the terroir of the wine country in Southern Oregon. That's the geology lecture at 7 o'clock at the Hale Center at Southwestern Oregon Community College in Coos Bay. Our guest right now, you can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 over the phone. By email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. And I notice you have taken this lecture to several places around the world. I can only imagine you've sampled wine in all those places, too.
And it's been lots of fun. And and in fact, we have the International Terroir Conference every 2 years. And after the first 28 years, it finally made it to the United States, and it was in Oregon this past summer at Linfield College, heart of the Willamette Valley AVA. And then year after next, in 2018, it's going to be in Rioja, in Spain. And so it bounces around from all of the major areas of the world. And I've also had a chance to visit almost every one of the major grape growing areas in the world and taste the wines and study the soils and study the terroir. And an interesting thing is Southern Oregon is saying, what is our grape or set of grapes that is going to make us famous? And there are a couple that are popping out. I think the best Tempranillo in the world outside of Spain is grown in Southern Oregon. There are over 50 wineries. And it's just got the perfect climate, but then the climate plus the differences in the geologies are producing some incredible Tempranillos. And then some of the Rhone varietals, like the Syrahs, the Viogniers, the Mouvedre, and things wines like that, are also rising to the top of the list. And in Southern Oregon, in the United States, when they say, what's the most famous wine there, Tempranillo is going to go right to the top.
So that raises the question about how often people ask you, I like this kind of wine. I want to grow these kinds of grapes. And if you'll ever say, given the soil you've got, that's probably not the best kind of grape for that.
Yes, and that happens. And I'm actually working with the country of Moldova, which is one of the Western old Soviet Socialist Republic countries that now is independent. And Putin has cut off buying all of the wine to Russia from there. It used to all be sold in Moscow, so they're looking for new markets. And I've been taking a look at their soils and their geology to help them market their wine. And it's interesting, and it's very good, and it's different.
I wonder then, Scott, if you get in a situation where you know a bit about where a wine has come from before tasting it, if you make some assumptions about how that wine is going to taste, and the assumptions are, are they often correct, or have you made some goofs?
Yes. First of all, if somebody says this Malbec is from Mendoza, Argentina, I know it's going to be great. And if this Tempranillo is from Umpqua, AVA, Southern Oregon, I know it's going to be great. So, yes, you can. But then remember, wines can be bad. 5% of all wines that use corks are corked. They get diseases in the corks, and you sip the wine, and it's just awful. And so you say it should be good, but sometimes in the process, it doesn't come out that way. I had a great Viognier a few years ago, and the grapes were from eastern Washington, but it was in the Willamette Valley, made in the Willamette Valley. And it was the best Viognier I've ever had. The next year, I went to the same winery, and it was the worst wine that I had ever tasted. Same vineyard and everything. It was just a little more ripe than normal, and it was just too ripe, and it just didn't turn out well. So you got to taste them all, and you never know. And then there are ones that have a bad reputation, and you taste it and say, oh, my God, that's really good.
I wonder where that was. Where was the wine that astounded you being good?
Just this year, my favorite Pinot Gris. I love Pinot Gris for the whites. Is from a Missoula Flood Sediment winery in the Willamette Valley. And I was not expecting really good. And I tasted it. I said, oh, my God, it's good. And I tasted it again and again, bought a half a case. And so sometimes my presupposed notions that this is going to be good because of the soil, this is going to be bad because of the soil, are wrong. And again, it goes back to the winemaker. The winemaker takes things to the next level. The soils are important. They're not the most important. Climate's important, but not the most important. But the winemaker can really control things.
Well, and speaking of control, you mentioned about the direction of rows a while ago. I, you know, often on my walks, I'll look across the valley and I'll figure out what north is by looking at the directions the vines are going. I always assumed that was to orient to the property line and the Willamette Meridian and all that, but it's more about something for the quality of the grape.
Yeah, and maximizing the heat units that the grapes are having. For instance, talking to the winemakers in the Illinois Valley, Cave Junction, they say we have to have them go north and south. If they go east and west, the northern side of the grapes never dry out. And so you need to have the sunshine coming in from all angles. But if you're north facing, they just don't get enough sunshine, and they get molds and mildews, and that's not very good. And so some winemakers like to have the early morning sun. Some like to have the late afternoon sun primarily. And so they will cut the lower leaves so the sunshine will come in onto those parts of the plant. So there's a vineyard management is incredible. The question is, do you plow everything in, or do you have a cover crop in between? Or do you go biodynamic, which is the ultimate organic type? And then you have special plants that are growing in between the rows, which are get rid of insects. And so there's a lot to vineyard management and a lot in the winery. The winemaker has to choose, do I oak it or do I not? If I oak it, do I use American oak or French oak or Hungarian oak? Do I use malolactic fermentation? What type of yeast? There are so many decisions that everybody has to make along the line, and that leads to all the different flavors.
Wow, so much information and so much enthusiasm as well. Scott Burns is a geology professor emeritus at Portland State University. His lecture tomorrow night at the Hale Center in Coos Bay is called Terroir of the Wine Country in Southern Oregon, and he's given us a preview here. Scott, thanks for that.
Thank you very much, Jeff, for great questions. You really did your research.
Thanks. You have great answers.